Thank you. Good evening, everybody. I would really like to thank Sudwin, FIAN Austria, OVV, and Via Campesina Austria for the opportunity for us, for the Transnational Institute in Amsterdam, to be at this house today. I have changed a little bit the topic of the presentation, and I hope it's more it fits more the discussion we would like to have later on. So we are all more or less aware, as the previous speakers already said, how from the mid-2000s onwards and within a convergent financial, food, energy and environmental crisis, a series of accumulation projects based on grabbing control over farmland, but also over water, over forests, seeds, as Andrea pointed out, and knowledge, are increasing worldwide, and this is important, worldwide across both southern settings, but also here in Europe, also in the global north, and both in rural areas and in urban areas. Our focus on shifting control and not just on changing property relations when talking about land grabbing derives from precisely an understanding of nowadays land grabs as grabbing the power to control land and other associated resources in order to derive benefit from them. Therefore, and this is something we would like to stress, our understanding of land grabbing does not imply always and necessarily the removal, the physical dispossession of people from the land. But, for instance, I would like to give a good example of this perspective. Contract farming, which is usually portrayed as a solution to land grabbing in agricultural lands, often results precisely in contract farmers losing control both over what to farm, over the decision of what to farm, and over their land rent. So for us, instead, as a technocratic response to food crisis, land grabbing is more appropriately framed and defined as control grabbing, and therefore understood as inherently renational and involving political power relations in which usually few people win and most lose. In order to fit their needs, corporate investors, and I stress this, as Andrea said, there are many investors in agricultural land, and the main are not necessarily the corporate investors, but corporate investors in these accumulation projects based on the control of land and other natural resources are working on the making of governable spaces in different countries with suitable socio-ecological and agroecological conditions. Spaces need to be made governable to fit this kind of investments, and for that it is needed to influence not only the formal regulatory frameworks and institutions, but especially ideas, discourses, and practices of different state, corporate, and social actors from the local to the global levels of governance. Indeed, corporate investments relying on land control grabbing are not necessarily presented as an accumulation project. No? They are usually framed as projects to strengthen food and energy security, to mitigate climate change, and to boost economic growth in socially and ecologically or environmentally responsible ways, as exemplified in mushrooming corporate, social, and ecological responsibility initiatives like this
for example, Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil and many other initiatives on so-called corporate social responsibility. Of course, this is nothing new. This is nothing but the old wolf in sheep's skin strategy to pretty up, to make decent contemporary land grabs, but we always think it's worth remembering it. The making of governable spaces to accommodate the global land control grabbing by corporate actors entails to us at least two distinct and major fixes. On the one hand, a labor regime fix to save the specific methods of mobilizing labor and organizing it in production and their particular social, economic, and political conditions of the workers. Most often, corporate investment projects on land and other natural resources result in reduced local opportunities for wage work while enforcing a community-detached, flexible, and hyper-commodified labor regime which does not even allow for workers to make ends meet. On the other hand, corporate investors push for a land good governance fix, namely the production of a durable consensus around a particular rationality of governing land, which is not only the most convenient for these investors, but it's also made to be perceived as such by the rest of state and social actors involved in agriculture. This land good governance fix is rooted in the freehold land tenure imperative spread globally since the early 90s through market-led agrarian reforms and land titling programs, prioritizing both in rural and urban divides, individual property rights over other practice and desired forms of land tenure. In this context of the global land grab, and as Mr. Fischler pointed out, there are efforts to regulate it. There are different efforts to regulate the global land grabbing phenomenon. Now, it is important to look at them. These regulatory efforts entail, in our understanding, very different positionings about what are the best ways to deal with pervading hunger and increasing inequality in access and control over land and other natural resources. We think there are three major and competing political responses to regulating global land grabbing today. The political positioning one is that of, yes, regulate, but to facilitate the global land grabbing project. This is the position of financialized investment capital and corporations, of some global governance institutions, most distinctively the World Bank and Family, and some governments, both from the global north and the global south. A political positioning too is that which is the middle ground position, to regulate land grabbing to mitigate negative impacts and maximize supposed benefits that are coming with it. No? For example, there is a mining project that is, of course, polluting water, so let's try and solve the problem of the water, but let's push for it because it will bring revenues, employment, so on and so forth. This middle ground position is particular to some global governance institutions, like the FAO, for example, but also others. Most governments from the global north and the global south, and most big international development and environmental NGOs, or most distinctively, those around the so-called International Land Coalition. And finally, as all can be expected, we find there is another political positioning, a political positioning three, which has to do with, yes, let's regulate land grabbing, let's regulate land control grabbing, but in order to stop and roll it back and not only thinking of land grabbing, but to push not for conjectural short-term remedies, but for an alternative life project. This is the positioning of grassroots organizations representing rural and urban working classes around the world. Most often, the alternative life project, which is proposed, is framed in the lines of a food sovereignty vision. As we see it, initiatives towards democratic land control and alternative food systems are intertwined. Indeed, efforts to construct food sovereignty often involve a struggle to struggles to reconstitute democratic systems of land access and control. So, informed by the narratives and the actual practices of rural working peoples and their movements, most distinctively La Vía Campesina, but also others part of the International Panel on Food Sovereignty, we understand that the construction of food sovereignty relies in democratic land control as a necessary material and political precondition. The relationship is nonetheless two ways. Democratic land control may be affected in a society, but without a strategic rebooting of the broader agricultural and food system, such occasional democratization of land control can easily fizzle out and revert back to older forms of land monopolies or trigger newer ones, as witnessed in the current wave of global land control grabbing. We propose then a shift from the call for technocratic land governance to a call for democratic land control, which we call so far, in the absence of a better name and with a name to link it to the food sovereignty vision, a call for land sovereignty. This term, we feel, captures the essence of democratizing land control in the context of democratizing the food system. Land sovereignty is therefore the right of the working peoples, rural and urban, to have effective access to, control over, and use of land, and live on it, on that land, as a resource, as a space and territory. Simply put, land sovereignty is the working people's right to land, as developed over time by the human rights organization Food First Information and Action Network, FIAN. In conclusion, we believe that as food sovereignty is proposed by social movements as the means for better ensuring the right to food of rural and urban working peoples, land sovereignty can potentially be the avenue for the realization of the right to land, both in rural and urban settings and across the global north and the global south alike. Thank you.